Okay, we're beginning here in Masechet Midot and Daf Lamed Dalid. The Masechet Midot is a recollection of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, that we'll see later on in the Masechta, as to what the Bayit HaShini looked like. The Bayit HaShini went through a number of renovations. The one that is being described here is the one that the Gemara in Baba Batra discusses, is where Herod upgrades and renovates significantly the Beit HaMikdash, to the point where the Chachamim say in Baba Batra, Mishalo Ra'ah, the Beit HaMikdash that was renovated by Herod, lo ra'ah yofi b'yamav, didn't see anything beautiful in their lifetime, meaning it was considered to be a tremendous building feat as well as something of a tremendous glory. Even the Romans held it in high esteem, even though they're in the end they're going to destroy it to suppress the rebellion of the Jews. But nevertheless, it was seen as being a building of significance and beauty, world class. And that's what's being described here based on those recollections of Rebbe Eliezer ben Yaakov, who lived through the Churban HaBayit. And here it's putting together what the function of the different parts, how it looked, and maybe giving us some indication as to what the Beit HaMikdash would look like in the future, because there are a number of aspects through the renovation of Herod that reconcile with the Nevuot of Yechezkel as to what the Bayit HaShlishi will look like. And so therefore it's both a recollection historically as to what was in Bayit Sheni, but also maybe a precursor to Bayit Shlishi. And obviously it's very helpful for us in understanding what we see today in the Kotel HaMaravi, as well as the antiquities and excavations that are found both on the southern side and on Har HaBayit itself. So the first couple of Mishnayot, Masechet Midot, should be familiar to us because they were all quoted in Masechet Tamid, and therefore we'll be able to move through them fairly quickly, which is B'shlosha b'mekomot ha-Kohanim shomrim b'Beit HaMikdash. In three locations, the Kohanim did shmir on the Beit HaMikdash. That's Beit Avtinas, which was the area where they made the Ketoret, in the Bavli. Again, there's a safek as to whether it's in the Darom or in the Tzafon, although the Yerushalmi concludes that it was in the Darom, it was on the southern side. Beit HaNitzotz, which we're going to see, is a chamber or connected to the Shar HaNitzotz, which we're going to see in the upcoming Mishnayot. Beit HaMoked, which again is going to be explicated upon by the Mishnah, and was located on the southeastern side of the Azara. The Leviim, Besriim Be'echad Makom, Leviim were doing Shmirah on 21 locations. That's based on the Pasuk in Divrei HaYamim that describes Leviim. When David HaMelech is putting together all that is to be readied for the Beit HaMikdash, there again it seems to be associated with the Mishkan, although it's not exactly clear what the interplay between that description, which is pre-Beit HaMikdash, and the Beit HaMikdash and Mishkan exactly were. But based on those psukim, the Gemara comes to the conclusion that they were 21 Leviim, even though the numbers don't match exactly. Nevertheless, the Gemara interprets some of the terminology used in the Pasuk to get us to the number of 21. There is a machloket amongst the Mifarshim as to whether the 21 subsumes within it the 3 Kohanim. So there are really 18 Leviim and 3 Kohanim, which is a view of the Bali HaTosafot in other places. There's also the view of the Smag that there actually were 24 locations where the Leviim guarded, means the 21 here, plus they also guarded similarly in the 3 places of the Kohanim, where the Kohanim were the Mala and the Leviim were the Mata. So there were actually 24 locations of the Leviim, 3 locations of Kohanim, which overlapped with 3 of the Leviim. And then there's the mainstream view of many of the Rishonim, that the 21 Leviim are to the exclusion of the 3 of the Kohanim. There's 24 in total, comprised of 21 of Leviim and 3 of Kohanim, which is the Pashtut of the Gemara in Tamid, which heavily supports that view when it asks the question on this Pasuk, how come you think there are 21 places of Leviim? It sounds like there are 24 from the Pasuk. And then the Gemara works out how to get from 24 to 21. And so we'll follow that view when we're discussing the Mishnah, that the Leviim are found in 21 locations, which the Mishnah will now explain where those locations were. Chamisha al chamisha sha'arei har habayit. The 5 on the 5 entranceways to har habayit. Arba'a al arba pinotav. 4 of them in the 4 corners of Har HaBayit, mitocho, both on the Sha'arim, as well as in the corners, the Leviim over there were guarding internally on Har HaBayit. Chamisha al chamisha sharei hazara, 5 guarding the 5 entranceways to the gateways, entranceways to the Azara, which the Gemara in Tamid discusses doesn't sound correct, because just in a couple of Mishnayot, the Mishnah is going to say that there were 7 Sha'arim tel Azara, so we'll deal with reconciling that when we get to that Mishnah. Arba'a al arba'a pinotav, mi bachutz. and then four levim on the corners of the azara outside. And that's true both of the corners as well as the sharim, the levim guard on the outside. And the Gemara in Masechet Tamid told us that's because of the fact that in case they got tired and they needed to sit down, they were able to sit down, because if you're inside the azara, then ein yeshiva ba'azara el de malchut beit David. Only those of the Davidic dynasty have the ability to sit down in the azara. Otherwise, one's not permitted to sit down. Therefore, if the levim grew tired from guarding, they wouldn't be able to be seated if they were inside the azara. Therefore, their guarding is done outside the azara. Whereas by Harabait, there's no such restriction, and therefore the guarding was done internally. As we discussed extensively in the Gemara in Tamid, in the first Mishnah there, the guarding here is not for protection. It's not to prevent theft. It is simply out of respect for the location. It's to give importance to it. It is like the palace of the king, whereby when you have guards, even just for show, that elevates the status of the place. It gives it a sense of importance, glory, royalty, and that's exactly what the guarding was here. As to when it was guarded, you can see the Rosh Mishnah says right here, Shomrim Beit HaMikdash Balelot. That was done at nighttime, not during the day, but we did see in the beginning of the Masechet Tamid that the Mefarish, the Ravid, and the Rosh all say that the guarding was done B'yom U'Balayla, and therefore you have a Machloket HaRishonim as to whether the guarding was only done at night, like the Rambam and the Rosh Mishnah, and the Tosfot Yom Tov, the Rabbar Tanura, all say something similar, whereas the Mefarish, the Raven, and the Rosh all say that the guarding was done both during the day and during the night. As to the identity of the Shearim and Harabait, as well as in the Azara, the upcoming Mishnayot will explicate on that. Then we have the story that we also saw in Masechet Tamid, Ish Harabait, Ayam Chazer, Al Kol Mishmar, Umishmar. The individual who's in charge of the Harabait, the Rosh Mishan, says he's Mimuna, Al Kol Mishmar, Umishmar, Shem Shomrim Ba'azara. He was appointed to supervise all the Mishmarot that were done in the Azara, whereas the Rosh over here says he's Mimuna, Shmirat Harabait. He was appointed to oversee security or the guarding of Harabait. That might relate to a secondary machloket as to whether this individual only had supervision over the Levi'im or also over the Kohanim. The Rambam seems to indicate that he had auspices not only over the Levi'im, but also over the Kohanim. Whereas the Tiferet Yisrael and others seem to indicate that it was he only had auspices over the Levi'im. And that's why he's known as Ish Harabait, because his authority really was on the area of Harabait, which is known as the Machane Leviyah, and that's where the Leviim were Shomrim. So the Mishnah here seems to indicate that it was only associated with the Leviim, because all the examples and all the information was given about the Leviim. Could be that that's just because the majority of the Shemirah was done by the Leviim, as well as the fact that the Kohanim are also known as Leviim in other places, but others take it very literally to say that he only had auspices over the Leviim. He used to go around checking on the guarding. They carried torches as he went around. Any mishmar that doesn't get up, hello, and say to him, Ish Harabait, Shalom Alecha, Mr. Harabait, welcome, good evening, it's good to see you. They don't give any greeting. They know that he is sleeping. Or the other way to read it, which is that Omerlo Ish Harabait, colon, rather than it being that the Mishmar that's being approached by the Avukot has to speak up and say, Ish Harabait Shalom Alecha, rather the statement is Omerler Ish Harabait. The individual who's in charge going around Harabait, he says to the Mishmar, Shalom Alecha. And if he doesn't get any response from them, Nikar Shu Yashin, because they didn't greet him when he brought the torches, and when he greeted them actively, they didn't respond, and we know that he's sleeping. Chofto b'maklo, then he can beat him with his staff. He also had the right to burn the bigadim of the Levi. And people who heard this screaming say, what's that noise in the Azara? It must be a Ben Levi that's being beaten and his clothing's being burnt, because he fell asleep on the job. He shirked his duty by not being awake during the time that he was supposed to be doing Shmira. And Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Amer Pamachat Matsuet Achi Ima. One time they found my uncle Yashin was sleeping, Vesarfu et Ksuto. They burnt his clothing. We saw in Masechet Tamid that the Rosh says that it's not a problem of Baal Tashchit, because it has constructive side to it, or because it was a knas that was imposed on them to teach them the importance of the guarding and the respect of the makom, or because of hefker beit din hefker, they had a right to burn the ksult of these individuals. And now the Mishnah continues to describe the she'arim that were noted above. Chamisha she'arim ayu lahar habayit. There were 5 she'arim entranceways to Har HaBayit. Shnei she'arei chuda min hadarom, the 2 chuda entrances on the southern side. Mishamshim knisa v'yitziah. They were both entrances and egresses for Har HaBayit. They were likely the main entrance to Har HaBayit because Ir David and the city of Yerushalayim was generally to the south. The newer area, when they expanded the city, started to shift more to the western side of the city. And later on in the Roman times, there is access to Har HaBayit from the western side as well. But the entrances on the western side still go to the area of the platform on the southern side, which does not have the Mikdash in it, which we'll discuss in the upcoming Perek. But the main entrances, again, were from the southern side. Many have thought that the reason they were called the Shari Chuda is because Chuda HaNevi'ah used to give her Nivuot between these She'arim. More recently, people have thought that they were called Shari Chuda because of the nature of their entrance. And that is that they were in the walls of Har HaBayit, and that person would enter there and then come up a staircase and appear and inside of Har HaBayit, coming up from basically underground. And so they were called Shari Chuda because they were like the tunnels of the weasels where they came from underground and then came up on top of Har HaBayit. So the entrance wasn't on a level plane with Har HaBayit. Rather, you entered from underneath Har HaBayit. If you go to the southern excavations and see the southern retaining wall, you can see that there were gateways there. And then entering those gateways, you then climb a staircase through a pathway and then up a staircase that puts you on level or the plane of Har HaBayit. And that's why they were known as Sharei Chuda. And again, they were the main entrance and egress of the Har HaBayit. Kiponos min ha-maraf, mishamesh knisa v'yitziah. There's Kiponos on the western side, which is also an entrance and an exit. We know from the excavations and the remains of what was on the western side of the Mikdash, that from the Jewish quarter, which was the newer area of the city of Yerushalayim, that we find entrances like the Wilson's Arch and the Warren's Gate, which were entrances on the western side of Har HaBayit that either had bridges or large staircases that took people up and to enter on the western side. And again, that was used for entrance and egress. What the word Kiponos has to do with the gateway is either because that was the individual who donated the gate or helped to pay or defer the costs of building that side or that western side, or because of what was found there. And the word kiponos in Greek means a garden. And that's because on that side or outside of that gateway, there might have been some planted garden that was there. Teddy Minatzafon, the northern side is the Teddy Gate. Again, whether that's the name of the individual who donated the gate, or others say that the word Teddy comes from the word Tzniut, Tzanua, because Lo Yamishamesh Klum, there was nobody entering and exiting from that side. That was the northern side, which in their time was not a settled part of the city. It comes out on the side of near the Via Dolorosa, Shar Ariot. That's where the paratroopers in 1967 entered to Har HaBayit. Again, I mentioned this numerous times. We'll mention it again, that when anybody comes to conquer Yerushalayim, the northern side is the easiest side to conquer it from because it does not have a natural valley on that side. And therefore, people didn't live on that side because it wasn't well protected. And the wall was really a fortress, a wall palace over different times, and it was used to protect the northern face of the Mikdash as well as Yerushalayim. We also know from later on that the Kohanim that were Tmeim v'Balkeri used to exit from that doorway. And so it's a question of chicken and egg. Maybe the meaning of the word Sanua that is used there is because in order to protect the identity of the Kohanim that exited from that side, nobody came in and out of there. Now, whether nobody came in and out of there because the Kohanim that were Tmeim went there, or is it because nobody went there, that's why the Kohanim Tmeim went out there? It's not clear which came first, but that might be the explanation of what the gateway is. Or later on, we're going to see that the word Teddy might also be spelled with a resh, which is try, and that's because the Mishnah later on will tell us that the gateway had a tripod, had a triangular pyramidic top to it, and that might be the explanation of why it was called Shar Teddy. Shara Mizrachi Alav Shushana Birat Surah. So the eastern gate, which is the one that you would enter from Har HaZeitim and would be aligned and directly entered towards the eastern gate into the Azara, that had on it drawn a picture of Shushan HaBira. The Gemara in other places, Machloket Amoraim, as to why it was placed there, was that because the Malchut wanted to instill Ema, make sure that the Jews knew that they were still subjects of the Persians, or was it a way to remember where they came from? That could have many different interpretations, whether that was voluntary to remember our humble beginnings, whether that was a tribute to Koresh Daryavish, who had given permission for the building of the Beit HaMikdash and even helped to fund it, or was it another way to say Jews did it in order to keep the Persian authorities at bay and show them that they weren't rebelling by building the Beit HaMikdash and serving God there? So that was known as the Shar Mizrahi, Pashabo, Kohen Gadol, Sharifet HaParah. Kohen Gadol is going to process the Parah Duma that's done in Har HaZeitim, B'chol Misadeha, and all the helpers and all those that were involved in the Parah Duma, Yotzim L'Har HaMishcha. They would exit from that gateway out to the Har HaZeitim. The fact that it mentions Kohen Gadol here, it will mention again later on in the Mishnayot with regards to the Parah Duma, might be because that Shita Rabbi Meir, that only the Kohen Gadol is permitted to do the Parah Duma. Or it could be because, even though a Kohen Hedjot is allowed to do it, the majority of the times a Kohen Gadol was the one who did it because it was considered to be a very important and rare thing to happen, and therefore the Kohen Gadol would have opted to do it. So it's a question as to whether this is only the Shita of Rabbi Meir, or this is just a recollection of what normally happened, even though it's not absolutely necessary that the Kohen Gadol do it, that even a Kohen Hedjot could have done the process of the Parah Duma. Now before we begin the next Mishnah, the Rosh Mishnah over here has an incredibly difficult explanation of this Mishnah, where he says that the Chamisha Shearim over here were not a reference to the five gateways to Har HaBayit, but rather the five gateways into Ezrat HaNashim. And again, that's a very difficult explanation, both because of what the upcoming Mishnayot seem to say, as well as the fact that we don't find any indication that there were five Shearim into the Ezrat Nashim. I'm just mentioning it as a note, but it doesn't seem to be that that is the correct explanation of the Mishnah that we just read. The next Mishnah begins, Shiva Shearim Ayub Azara. There were seven gateways into the Azara, which is obviously a stira to what we saw before, that the Levim guarded at five gateways into the Azara, which seemed to imply there were five. The Gemara in Tamid reconciles that in one of two ways, either to say there is a machloket as to whether there are 5 or 7 or 8 or 13, or to say that the sheet of the Rabbonan is that even though there were 7 she'arim, you only needed guards on 5 of them, and that's because 2 of the she'arim sat between the ones that were west of it and east of it, and therefore they were guarded because they sat between 2 other she'arim that were guarded. So the Shiva she'arim, the 7 gateways that are mentioned here, are Shlosha b'Tzafon, 3 on the north, Shalsha b'Darom, 3 on the south, Bechad b'Mizrach, 1 on the eastern side, which was the main entrance into the Azara, Shebedarom, on the southern side, Shara Delek. The order is not clear here, but it seems to be that on the southern side, they're starting from those that are the furthest west, and the one that they're starting with is Shara Delek, which seemingly they through which they brought in the Itzim to be placed on the Maracha. Or it's because it's where they brought the fire into the Mikdash in order to light the Mizbeach and the pyre and to keep the fires going in the Mikdash, because it's a mitzvah, Laviyot Tomei Hedjot, even though it's Yoreid Min HaShamayim. Sheni Lo Shara Korban. The one after that is the Shara Korban, through which they brought Korbanot that only needed to be processed on the southern side because they were Kodshim Kalim. And Shlishi Lo Shara Mayim. And then the third one on there is Sharamayim, which we'll see later on in the Masechta, the Machloket, as to whether the Sharamayim is known for that because they brought the Nisuch HaMayim through there, or it's because the future Nevuah of Yechezkel, where there'll be a river that flows out of the Kodshei Kodashim and a tiny stream will start to expand, and it gets to the Sharamayim where it exits from the Beit HaMikdash and starts to grow and grow in force because there'll be a live spring coming out of the Beit HaMikdash. So that may be what the references to that pasuk in Yechezkel that says, "Beinei mayim mipachim min haketef hayimanit," from the right side. And when you're facing east, your right side is south. When you're facing east, which is the way that mapping and directions were done in that time, yimanit was south. And that's why Yemen is in the south, because it's yimanit when you're facing eastward towards what would be the front or the opening, the sun, the panim of the world. And according to the Yerushalmi, the Beit Avtinas was on the southern side and Aliyah above the Shar HaMayim. And in that way, you have now the three locations where the Kohanim were. One was above the Shar HaMayim, the Beit Avtinas. One was in the Beit HaMoked, which we'll discuss in a second. And the other one was in the Beit HaNitzotz, which was above the Shar HaNitzotz, where there was a Levi. Shebi Mizrach, the one on the eastern side, was known as Shar Nikanor, which is famous, and we'll speak about that later in the Masechta, as to why it was known as Shar Nikanor. Ushtei Lishkot Ayulo, there were two chambers adjacent to the gateway on the eastern side of the Shar Nikanor. Chad Mimino, one to the right, which was the northern side, Vachad Mismolo, one on the southern side. Achad Lishkat Pinchas Amabish, we'll assume that they match up, that the one on the right side was the northern chamber, was that of Pinchas Amabish, who was the one who provided, or was the tailor, for all of the clothing that the Kohanim needed. Whether he was someone who was particularly adept at this, was a tzaddik, and therefore they remember him, or whether he was the first one who ran this, and therefore his name is associated with it, or whether he was the person that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov was telling this over, remembers, ran that chamber. And the other one was where they made the minchat chavitim for the Kohen Gadol. If you remember from Masechet Tamid, that's where the original people who entered into the Azara, when they encircled the Azara to check that everything was in place, that's where they met by the Lishkat Osei Chavitin, and they left the Kohanim there to start the process of preparing the Minchat Chavitin of the Kohen Gadol. Shibet Zafon, the gateways on the northern side, Shar Nitzotz, was the Shar Nitzotz, which would be associated with the Beit HaNitzotz, where we saw that the Kohanim also guarded. And the Shar Nitzotz is a Keminach Sadra Haya. It was a gazebo-like structure, which either was open on all sides or open on one side. It only had walls on three sides. Therefore, there was a lot of light that came in there. Valiyab Nuyal Gabav. And then there was a attic or something above. Shakonim Shomrim Milamalon Valuvim Milamaton. Where you had a Kohen up above in the Beit HaNitzotz, as we saw in the first Mishnah. And you have a Levi down below guarding the Shar HaNitzotz. Petach Hayolo Lechel. And there it had a doorway out into the Chel. Seems to be extraneous information because all of these gateways to the Azara open on one side to the Azara. And then on the external side, they would open up into the Chel, which was the area outside the Azara before you reached Har HaBayit. Again, we'll see about this in the next parak. So then you would have to explain that Petach Haya means there was an additional doorway out of there that went to the Chel. It wasn't just one doorway. But then you had either because there was a Kohen and a Levi there, they covered both of the doorways, or because it was only an ancillary doorway, it was covered by the Levi who was guarding already the Shar, then that additional doorway was also covered by the Levi. Sheni Lo, the next Shar, is the Shar of Korban. This is on the northern side, so these are where you would bring in the Kodshei Kodoshim to be brought on the Mizbeach. And Shlishi Lo, the one that's the furthest east on that northern side, is the Beit HaMoked, which we discussed extensively in Masechet Tamid. And again here, the Mishnah is going to describe exactly what the Beit HaMoked was, what was found inside of it. And then we'll discuss again the fact that this is different than what's mentioned in the Mishnah in Tamid, and how the Gemara and Yoma reconciles between the two of them. Arba Lishkot Ayu, the Beit HaMoked. There were four chambers inside of the Beit HaMoked. Kikitonot Tuchot Etraklin. They're like sleeping quarters or small chambers that open up into the main area in a palace. Shtayim b'kodesh u'shtayim b'chol. Two of them were to the northern side, which put them outside the Azara, and two of them were to the southern side, which put them inside the Azara, or made them kodesh. V'rashei pispisim abdil ben kodesh t'chol. And there were these juttings that came out, either of the wall or on the floor, that indicated the division between chol and kodesh. And now, as to whether this was a specific binyan, whether this was a little fence, whether this was mosaic, is discussed in the Rishonim, and we'll discuss it again when it comes up again in the Azara. Mayu Mishamshot, and what was the purpose of these four chambers that were inside the Beit HaMoked? Marvit Dromit, the southwestern chamber, Huayta Lishkat, Tlei Korban, that was the Lishka where they kept the animals that were Mevukar, that were already checked for Mumim, that were in preparation for the Korbanei Tamid. They used to keep 6, 8, 10, based on what you think the Girsa was in the Gemara that discussed how many they kept there. Dromit Mizrachit, on the southeastern side, Yaita Lishkat Lechem Apanim. it was the Lishka in which they prepared the Lechem Apanim. Mizrachit, Tzvonit, the northeastern one, which is the one in the Chol, Baganzu Bnei Chashmonayit Avnei HaMizbeach. There they put into Gniza the blocks or rocks of the Mizbeach, Shishikzu Machei Yavan, that were defiled by the Greeks when they came into the Mikdash and turned it into a temple to the idols. The Mefarshim discussed the tension between the restriction against taking the Mizbeach apart versus the ability of a foreign entity to change the status of something that's Mechubar the Karka, and whether they actually could defile it to the point where you couldn't use it. You could just answer in the end that out of Kavod, it was the proper thing to do to remove it, and that would suspend the restriction against destroying it because it's really constructive here, where they're taking it to take away the Tumah and the defilement and make it something that was more Kadosh and appropriate for Avodat Hashem, Tzvonit Maravit, and the northwestern chamber. Again, that's in the Chol, because the northern chambers were in the Chol. Bayordim, the Beit HaTfilah, as we discussed in Masechet Tamid, where they were able to descend down to go to the Mikveh. Now, that is in contrast with the description that we have in the Mishnah in Tamid, that seems to give a different layout to the chambers that were here. And in Tamid, it says that the Lishkad HaTlaim was found on the northwestern side rather than the southwestern side that is said in this Mishnah. And then the Lechem HaPanim, seemingly in the Mishnah in Tamid, is found in the northeastern side rather than on the southeastern side. And therefore, the Gemara in Yoma has to come up with a reconciliation. The main reconciliation is with regards to Lishkad HaTlaim, which is mentioned in both Mishnayot explicitly. Over here it says it's in the south. In Tamid it says it was in the north. The Gemara says in Yoma that it was because it stretched across both. It actually encapsulated or covered both the north and the south. Most of the Mefarshim believe that its majority or the main placement of it was in the southwestern corner, and that it extended across the midpoint of the Beit HaMoked into the northern side. And that's why the Mishnah in Midot mentions on the northern side. Although the Rambam here in the Perush Mishnayot adds in an additional explanation, which is that the description of the Lishkat Leah Karban that's found in Tamid, putting it in the northwestern side, is a description of when you measure it against the Azara as a whole, it was found on the northwestern side of the Azara, although that's not so accurate because the Beit HaMoked is skewed to the eastern side of the northern side of the Azara. But in that way, both Rashi and Yoma and the Rambam over here try to reconcile. And then they both ask or both deal with the fact that there are the remaining Lishkot that need to be reconciled. So Rashi has the Beit HaChotamot overlapping with the Yeridah LeTevilah, the Beit HaChotamot that's mentioned in Tamid overlapping with the Yeridah LeTevilah. The Lishkat Beit HaMoked is where they kept the fire. That was a smaller fire that was kept there. That's in the same location as the Avnei Mizbeach that Ganzun Chashmonai. And then the Lechem HaPanim was found in the southeastern corner, and then it'd be overlapping both Mishnah Midot and Mishnah Tamid. And the way Rashi does that is that the Mishnah Tamid is describing them in a clockwise fashion, whereas the Masechet Midot is describing them in a counterclockwise fashion, and that way he has them overlap. The Rambam and the Bartanur, following the sheet of the Rambam, says that the Lishkat Beit HaMoked, where the fire was actually the area where the Misibar, the Ridah, the Tevilah was, because the Kohanim who went to do their Tevilah there would come and stay by the fire to warm up. And the Beit HaChotamot overlapped with the place of the Geniza of the Avnei Mizbeach by the Chashmonaim. And then again, in the same vein, they have the Lishkat Osei, Lechem HaPanim, found in the southeastern corner. And in that way, they reconcile between that which we see here and that which was found in Masechet Tamid. Now, Shnaim She'arim Ayu the Beit HaMoked. The Beit HaMoked, which we saw, was a decently large chamber that had four chambers on the sides of it. It had two gateways into it, one that exited to the Chel, which was out going towards Har HaBayit, v'chad patuach le'azara, and one that entered into the Azara. Amar Rav Yehuda, zayah patuach le'azara, the one that had the entranceway into the Azara, pishpesh katan hayalo, it had a small doorway, either embedded in it or next to it, bo nichnasim livloshet Azara, as we saw in Masechet Tamid, from which they went to be bolesh, means to spy on, but really there it means to check on the Azara early in the morning to make sure that everything was in place and drop off the individuals by the Lishkat Minchat HaChavitin to begin the process of boiling the water for the Minchat HaChavitin. Then the Beit HaMoked was made Bekipa, Now, whether that means that it had a kippah, a rounded top, a domed roof to it, or that it was actually structurally built on stilts or arches, which means that the kippah was the foundation upon which the Beit HaMoked sat. Ubayit Gadol Hayan obviously was a large area, Mukuf Rividim Shaleven, that had stone stairs around it. And that's what we described in Masechet Tamid, that Ziknei Beit Av Yishanim Sham, they used to sleep on those stair-stepped protrusions of stone that climbed up the wall and gave this sensation of there being bleachers around the Beit HaMoked. They used to sleep there because they were the Ziknei Beit Av. The Rosh Mishantz goes as far as to say that only the Lishkot that were internal to the Beit HaMoked, meaning the two that on the southern side were in the Kodesh, but the Beit HaMoked itself was, none of it was in the Kodesh. Although most people believe that even the Beit HaMoked itself was split in half, half Kodesh, half Chol, and the Ziknei Beit Av, you should just sleep on the side that was Chol and not on the side that was Kodesh. Maftechot HaAzarah Adam, they had supervisory authority over the keys of the Azarah. Upirchei Kunai, Ish Kesuto Baaretz, Ish Kesato Baaretz, and the young Kohanim used to sleep on either their pillows or their clothing. That all depends on what we read in the Gemara in Masechet Tamid, whether that means that it was adjacent to them, whether it means there was a pillow, or whether it means that there was no problem of getting hana from Bigdei Kehuna. And the Mefaresh Tamid said that the Pirkei Kehuna had nothing to do with the guarding of the Beit HaMoked, whereas the Rambam believes when they slept there, acted or functioned as the guardians of the Beit HaMoked. And the usage of Pirkei Kehuna over here, in contrast to the rubim that were used in Masechet Tamid that described those that were doing the guarding in the other locations, over there we saw the Gemara differentiated between them, and the Rishonim gave different explanations as to what the difference was, whether the Pirkei Kehuna were those of age, Kohanim that were going to do work in the Mikdash, rubim were those that were underage, or whether them both of them were of an age to do avoda, just those that were guarding were not going to be in service the next day in the Mikdash, whereas the Pirkei Kehuna were going to be in service the next day, and that's why they slept in the Beit HaMoked to be ready for work the next day. Or, since that area was more kadosh, because it had part of it that was part of the Azarah, there they put Pirkei Kehuna, who were older or more experienced, rather than the Rubim that they put in the other locations. And even though there were two doorways to the Beit HaMoked, there was only one guard on that, and that's because, as Abaye says in the Gemara Tamid, one guard could cover both doors, because you could either see both of them, or because the Kohanim were also involved with the Leviim, and therefore they took care of this. Or because the Pirkei Kehuna were sleeping on the floor, you didn't need someone to guard the other door, because they were found inside of the Beit HaMoked. Makom HaYasham, inside the Beit HaMoked, there was a location of Amal Amah, with Tavla Shoshayish, and it had a marble piece of stone on it, with Tabat Haitak Vuaba, and there was an iron ring that was there, with Shoshelet Shemaftechot Ayutuliot Ba, and the chain upon which the keys of the Azarah were found there, whether the ring was on top and that was used to lift up the stone from the location and the keys were underneath on the chain, or whether the ring was actually underneath the stone and the keys were attached by chain to that ring that was underneath the stone. That's the view of the Meiri. When it came to locking up the Azarah, they lifted up the tabla with the simple meaning the tabat was on top, the ring on top, and they lifted it up. They took the keys off the chain. Then the Kohen would go around and lock all the doors of the Azarah. And the Ben Levi was sleeping on the outside. Sounds like here that the Ben Levi was actually sleeping in the location where the keys were found. Even though the Ben Levi is not allowed to sleep on the job, nevertheless, this is the locking up of the Azarah that's done during the daytime. And therefore, the Leviim, who, according to many, only guarded at night, they were sleeping during the day, so this was during the prime period that was daytime. He was sleeping there in preparation for his guarding later on, and that's why he is sleeping. Although the Rosh Mishantz suggests over here that the Levi slept there because he was the one that guarded and stood on top of the stone that was there, and that was his guarding. He was actually allowed to sleep because the only way you can get access to the keys was to lift him up or to move him, and therefore he was sufficiently guarding because he didn't need to be awake in order to do his job. Gomer Leonol, once he locked up the whole Azarah, Gzirat HaMaftechot LaShoshelet, he returns the keys to their chain, Veta Tavla Limkoma, puts the stone back in place, Natan Ksuto Aleha, and Yashan Lo. He puts his clothing, his garment, his pillow on it, and goes to sleep. Again, the Rosh Mishnah thinks that's the Levi that was there beforehand. He goes back to sleep on it. On the other hand, the way that the Rambam and others seem to describe it here, it was the Kohen who had locked it up is the one who goes to sleep there, and he wakes up the Levi, who then is going to be guarding. And as we know from the Sechet Tamid, Irak Keri Bechad Mehem, one of the Kohanim who had slept there overnight, had a seminal emission overnight, Yotzeva Lo Klo B'Misiba, he exits through the spiral staircase, which Haloche Takara Bira goes underneath the Migdash, or the place called Bira. And Yerot Toke Mikan Mikan, the tunnel has candles on both sides to keep it alight. Achim Yagia the Beit HaTefillah, until he reaches the mikvah down below. And Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Ber Misiba Haloche Takara Chel, that he goes through the Misiba underneath the Chel, Yotzeva Olach Lo B'Tedi, and then exits the Migdash through Shar Tedi. From the Masechet Tamid, it seems to be that the machlokah between them is whether the Kohen returns back to the Beit HaMoked after he does his tefillah, or does he need to exit from the Migdash? And it seems that the Chachamim believe that even though a Tevul Yom is not allowed to be in the Azara or to be in the Beit HaMoked, nevertheless, since it happened there, he does not need to exit immediately. We give him a chance to come back, wait till the gates open up in the morning, and then to only exit in the morning when the time has come, rather than to have to exit immediately. We discussed that very extensively in Masechet Tamid, whereas Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that he can't come back and he has to exit. And again, the issue of Tevul Yom in the Azara is an issue midrabanan, and therefore there is room for dispensation in that matter, which is the view of the Mifaresh in Tamid. Whereas the Achronim, like the Gra, the Rashash, the Rav Eger, all believe that maybe the Machloket here between them is where he went into the tunnel. Could he go into the tunnel that went in the Misiba, that went under the Bira? Or could he only go into a tunnel that went through the Chel or under the Chel, because that was called a Gamre? And that's why he was permitted to go through there, which is the view of Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, whereas the Chachamim believe he could even go underneath the Bira, because there's no restriction since the Tumah happened while he was already in the Azara. And so both believe that he has an exit through Shar Tedi. It's just a question of how he exits through Shar Tedi. And with that, we're going to stop here at the end of the first perek, Hadron Halach, v'shlosha mikomot.